Excellent. So, as usual, the end of the first part of this evening's entertainment. Some people leave, some people come in. And I always try and count the number of people who come in compared to the number of people who go out to make sure I'm always in profit. Very good. And of course, even on the outside, I think you can hear on the outside, I do believe, sitting outside. Because sometimes when it gets very hot, today's a very nice day, not too hot, not too cold. And sometimes people need to go to toilets. We don't call them toilets here, we call them letting go rooms. It's really true, because if you learn just how to relax and let go, you never get constipation. Constipation is just forcing things too much. Just relax, let go. That's why I call it letting go rooms. Anyway, for the talk this evening, I read now and again to get some questions. And one of the questions which came up, which somebody passed on to me, was just the importance of being able to ask questions and to have your questions respected. Because sometimes there's some religions, you don't ask a question, you have to just believe, or else. And other times people answer questions, but they tend to sometimes brush them aside. And one of my experiences was now asking a question from these so-called gurus or professors, and just not really being taken seriously. Maybe for them it was just a basic question, but for me it was really important. And I always thought from that time on, just when a person does ask a question, if you've got the time and you can still give an answer, then just try your very best to make those answers. Because any sort of religion, any sort of teacher should actually at least know something about what they're talking about and should practice what they teach. It's one of the reasons why I disappeared for the last 8 days, because teaching all over the place. I went over to the UK first of all, to help with the Bhikkhuni monastery over there, starting out. Just the last Rinul Chanda has now got a place to call a temporary home. But anyway, just renting a place. But, and then also giving talks and giving retreats, and then flying as soon as I got over my jet lag, then flying over to Malaysia and doing my duties over there, teaching retreats. And as soon as I finished there, going over to Singapore to teach. And as soon as I finished there, come over here for New Year's Eve for Ajahn Brahm's upside down quiz. If you didn't know what the upside down quiz, you really missed out. The upside down quiz was all about questions and answers by doing it the other way around. I just gave 10 answers and asked people to work out what the questions were. Doing it a little bit different, because people always think, do the question first and then we give you the answer. So why can't we do it the other way around? So one of the answers was 808. What was the question? I'm not telling you, you have to work it out. But anyway, one of the other questions was, what senior monk over here in West Australia, an abbot, was born in Indonesia? You know who that was? And that was Ajahn Santuti. He said, no, he can't be, he's as Australian as anything in the way he speaks. But then his Vietnamese, his parents, but he was his mother. Just amazing sort of, you can see just how desperate sometimes refugees are. She left in a boat while she was pregnant. And managed to, really a long time pregnant, because, in the womb was Santuti. And managed to land in an island off Indonesia, in a being a refugee camp there, and that's where he was born. So he was born in Indonesia. Lives in Australia, citizen, but Vietnamese. Life is very confusing these days. But anyway, but after that, I always have to make sure that I practice what I preach. And then one of those things was I ask people, when you're tired, take a rest. Take time off. And so that's what I did for 8 days in Bodhinyana Monastery in my cave. Just, you know, chilling out for 8 days. It's my little holiday. Because sometimes when you go overseas, you think, oh, monks have a holiday all the time. But sometimes you notice how hard we can work, which we do work, serving other people. But anyway, what I'm serving today is actually, you know, questions and answers. Actually practicing what you're teaching. Because one of the reasons I like being a Buddhist, why I was interested in being a Buddhist, I was a scientist before, a physicist. And you know, a lot of times we look at sort of physics, we look at meditation, we look at mind, spirituality, and our modern world, and sometimes there's a bit of a disconnect. We want to try and make a bridge, you know, between the material world and what we call these days the spiritual world. And if we just go to one and forget the other, then there's really a total lack of balance. There has to be some synergy there. And to me it was always obvious that one of our big problems is actually when we just think the material world is just everything. So one of the questions people were just asking, said, well, you know, where did this world come from? You know, was it true that there was a big bang many years ago and there this world was created or happened by chance or whatever? Hang on a bit. You're just talking about stuff, about material things, about wood and metal and atoms and energy and stuff. But there's much more to the world than that. It's not just material, there's the mind. There's love, there's fear, there's hatred. Where on earth is that in the material world? It's something which is two parts to this thing we call life. Just the bodies, the stuff, but it's also the thing which we call the mind. And sometimes, you know, having a bit of an education, you sometimes wonder just where on earth has our society gone? That we think that even like love or caring for one another is all about some chemical secretions in the brain from the pituitary gland who make you like some people and don't like other people. Is it all just about chemicals? You can measure chemicals, because we're very good at that. But can't we measure emotions as well, which is part of the mind? And to prove the point, there was, keep on saying this, good old Aristotle. Who was supposed to be those Greek philosophers, were supposed to be the people who put the foundations of philosophy and science in our culture. And even Aristotle would always say there were six senses. The five senses of seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touch, but the sixth sense was the mind. And he called the mind the common sense. Because whatever you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, the mind can also know. It can take that up for its own objects, and it also has its own knowing. So, in 2000, almost 400 years since Aristotle, the Western world lost its mind, and with it, its common sense. We've only got five senses now. And that explains a lot. Material stuff, but not the mind. And that's one of the reasons why physics, science, was great when it starts to look at the physical world, the stuff, but it's not working. You know, we want to have science so we can understand and also find our way, in a sense, to control and to find safety and find purpose, you know, in our world, in our life. But there's something science always, always misses. That's materialistic science. The nature of this mind. It's not just human beings evolve. That's just the people, that's the vehicles. What about the drivers? What about the people inside of your body? Don't you evolve? Two things, the body and also the mind. And what I was always just almost, well actually yeah, I did pull my hair out in frustration with scientists. It's a sort of joke, pull my hair out, okay. That for somehow or other, they could not understand the fact that there's more to this life than just stuff, material. It's one of the reasons why you become like a monk. There's more to life than stuff. When it comes to stuff, things, my material possessions are just hardly anything. I've got no bank account, got no credit cards, I've got no assets, I've got no, even my little cave which I live in, it's only, many of you have seen that cave. Materially, I'm a failure. That's why some people look at me and they say, Ajahn Brahm, you could have done so much, you could be wealthy by now, you could be in a big mansion, you could be driven around in a big car, you could be retired by now, just living a life of luxury. Ajahn Brahm, you're a loser. And I always like that term, a loser. I say, yes, I'm a loser. And of course, the biggest loser is the Buddha. Losing all your worries, all your fears, losing all your anxiety, losing all of your worries, what other people think of you, losing your past and future, and just being in this moment as much as you possibly can. Losing always having to try and fulfill other people's expectations of you. You know how hard that is? What your mother wants, what your father wants, what your kids want of you, what your family want of you, what the government wants of you, what the Buddhist Society Committee wants of you, what the members want of the committee. It's very tough. But isn't it wonderful losing fear? Losing anxiety? Just losing this always rushing around. That's why I did took 8 days off. Just to prove, yeah, I can sit still. So, but actually, even when I go overseas, I never move. I just sit in the aircraft, and the aircraft does all the moving. I just sit down. But anyway, that when we understand that there's much more to life just than just this doing stuff and this body stuff, to materialism, we understand that there's the spirituality as well. And that is really important, because sometimes people think that they are failures in life because materially they're not doing well. Even families, they go through divorces. Health-wise, you have sicknesses and cancers and deaths in your family. Why do we judge ourselves and think we're failures because of that? If that was the case, I'd be number one failure. Great promise. That's why my grandma used to say it. And my lay name was Peter. Why are you wasting such a good education? You're a good-looking young man, you should get married, and... I was, you know, I wasn't always this fat. But, is there missing something there? Is that the meaning of life? Just stuff? And of course you realize there's much more to this life. And of course, if things do go wrong, do they really go wrong in life? So here we have, starting off with the first little piece of Buddhism, the question people ask, this law of karma. Is it that somebody's got it in for you? You know, that's what I say. That was one of my philosophical teachers in those carry-on movies. Remember carry-on, it must be my age, the silly old carry-on movies. I think it was carry-on sort of in a boat or something. I don't forget what, but anyway, infamy, infamy. They've all got it in for me. That was a little pun, play on words. But why do you always think that people have got it in for you? Sometimes when life goes a bit difficult, it's not like some God up there is got it in for you, or some other person is sometimes trying to control you, making life difficult for you. Because instead, you always think that these are opportunities, disasters, sicknesses. When things don't go according to your plan, it's an opportunity This is what karma is all about. This usual simile, two people baking a cake. Who bakes the best cake? It's not always the one with the best ingredients. The ingredients are only just a part of baking a cake. It's the care, the love, the energy you put in to what you have. That is the most important. You may have the most best ingredients from the whole world. Here we go. You have organically grown whole wheat flour, free range. I saw that in a restaurant in London. Free range sausages. I couldn't actually quite understand what free-range sausages actually were. I was sort of imagining sausages just roaming the streets of London. I'm sort of thinking, how they did that, free-range sausages. Anyway, so the best possible flour, just honey from Western Australia with no, what they call, I have to say gluten-free flour. And what else is there? Organically grown honey with no looking after the bees. And what else is there? Pollinated with, actually I think I should go to that environmental group so I can learn all the jargon again. And canola oil, which is supposed to be okay for you, no cholesterol. Taken away. What else do you have for baking a cake? Eggs. Oh, from chickens. Okay, well maybe, is that, okay, well, again, was it tofu, sorry? Free-range eggs. Okay, free-range eggs. And also, lastly, with Buddhist chickens who give like compassionately but with no force. Out of the kindness of their own, whatever. And lastly, a really good, I got fruit. Very nice fruit, fresh fruit from the trees. And nothing canned or nothing sort of from free range trees, obviously. free trade trees. And anyway, and then also with a lovely kitchen to cook in. And against that, you got really poor people. Who just get just white flour, really old white flour. They've got to pick out the green mouldy bits. I remember doing that as a student, you know, being poor, just, you know, taking out the green mouldy bits and then using the rest of the flour. And diabetically enhanced sugar and cholesterol-enriched butter or margarine, whatever it is, and just really dried old fruit. Who bakes the best cake? And it isn't always a person with the best ingredients. It's what you do with your life. How much energy, how much positivity, and just how much care you put into what you've got. And that is always the most important. So when things go wrong in life, it's opportunities to really get in there and do something special. You know, with what life gives you. That's what karma is. Karma doesn't restrict you. It doesn't say, oh, just why did this happen to me? Why did the relationship finish again? It's relationships come, relationships go. So whatever happens to you in your life, make it work. Put energy into it. But the law of karma, this is also one of the reasons why that I just noticed that, you know, whenever you get into any sort of management position, where you have to make decisions in life. Why is it that people just worry so much about what decision they should make? Should I marry this person or should I get divorced? Should I go and take this operation or not take this operation? How should I deal with this sickness? How should I deal with a Buddhist society? Where should we build another monastery? Should we not build another monastery? How should we do things? Should I relax or should I go to work? We make decisions in life, and the problem is that we worry too much about which decision we make. To the point that by the time we actually make a decision, we've got no energy or resources left. We're a limited resource, and we waste it on worrying about decisions. To me, just make a decision. Just make it. If you think about getting married, I know about these things. I've been a monk for such a long time. So it doesn't matter who you marry, they're all the same. You think your wife is special? You think your guy is the best? When you actually get a dog, when you get a dog, you don't sort of, you know, check the dog's character first of all. You don't sort of go and take the dog and just try and find its pedigree and just trying to find out what other people think about the dog. You just get a dog and you learn to love it. But you get a wife and you get a, you take a husband. Why can't you just love them? Well, you have kids. I mean, kids are the special thing. You never choose a kid. You know, apparently sometimes these days they try to do genetic modification of kids, but that'd be terrible. You know, you sort of have a kid. You don't know what's going to come out of that womb. You know, sometimes, you know, you don't know if it's going to be a Mr. Trump or a an Adolf Hitler or, you know, sort of a Mahatma Gandhi. You know, who knows what's going to come out of that womb. But you will love that kid so much, no matter who they are. Isn't it? Why we choose our partners, and we waste so much time choosing. We don't realize that what's really important is what we do after we've made the choice. The karma is always work in action. It's not fate. We're always doing more things. To prove it's not fate, is it? There was this gentleman who came one day, and it was my birthday. And what do you get for a monk who literally wants for nothing? He doesn't want anything. What do I want for a birthday? So if you think it's hard to get, you know, your mother or father something for their birthday, imagine trying to get something for a monk. You know, we don't need anything. So anyway, so what he did, he was very smart. He decided to find out not just the day of my birth, but the time I was born. He just asked, well, what time were you born? I said, well, I'm not quite sure. You know, I wasn't really paying attention at the time. But according to my mother, it was about 5:30 in the afternoon, I think she said. And so he wrote it down. And he got one of these really expensive top astrologers to work out my horoscope. And he presented it to me on my birthday, in public, in front of everybody. And he said, Ajahn Brahm, you know, you always give so much to other people. I want to give you something for your birthday. And it's your horoscope, not just a cheap one you just get from the West Australian and just in the on the weekend edition or something. You know, it's a really expensive one. He said, from one of the top astrologers, and he said, this is your horoscope. This is your horoscope for this year. And he started reading it out. He didn't actually get past the first paragraph, only halfway through. Because it read, for anyone who was born on 7th of August 1951 at 5:30 p.m, this year will be a very good year for romance. And of course that cracked everybody up, and it was wrong, obviously, I'm still a monk. So much for that. But it was a good idea, it was good fun. It made me laugh, and that's much more important than actually just giving you stuff and give you some happiness, which is a wonderful gift. So anyway, there we're going back to the material stuff of life, and you know, sometimes it's not what you have, but what you do with what you have. What you make of, you know, a horoscope, what you make of your life. So when we make a decision, whatever that decision is, save up your energy, make a decision quickly, and save up your energy to make sure that decision's going to work. You're going to learn from it. You're going to grow from it. And that is really important. So it means that when you do make the decision, that is where the work starts, to make it work. If it's a business, if it's a monastery, if it's a new lifestyle, a new person, whatever you're doing, make it work. That's where the energy goes. That's why calm is always work in action. If you decide to go to the toilet, make it work. Get in there, however long it takes, just let it go. So, this means that it's not fate, and it's life is always work in action. And it means there's always so many twists and turns in life, it's an adventure story, and the last thing you ever want to do is read the last page of the book to find out who did it, what's going to happen in the end. Do you really want to know that? That'd be terrible if you knew that, because this is the journey, the adventure, the excitement of life. This is where we really learn. And I've known a lot of times, a lot of people, including myself, times get some tough sometimes, difficult. But those tough times, those difficult times, that's when we learn the most. So don't ever say, why me? When life goes to be difficult for you, say, yes, at last, and I've got really something I'm going to grow from. When life gets tough, what is it? You've trodden in the dog poo. Can I say it? The dog shit. Because that's what you say outside of it. But somehow or other, when you're sort of a monk or a person of religion, you're not supposed to say those words. But yeah, listen, you're treading the dog shit. What do? You dig it in your garden to make trees. The more shit, the more trees. The more fruit, and the sweeter it is. But I remember, I keep saying this, you must always remember to learn that when you bite into that mango, so sweet and so juicy, and the juice starts dripping down your cheek, you must always remember what it is you're really eating. It's dog shit, isn't it? You forget that. It's been transformed into this delicious mango. Or whatever else you like to eat. But what it means there is the difficulties of life, if you know how to dig them in and create gardens, this causes the beauty and the richness and the joy and the wisdom and the compassion of life. So this is an important point. It's not as if life is cruel or hard. It gives you the opportunities. Somebody dies in your family. Like even just a person died a couple, well, they're always dying. But anyway, this one just came to the monastery and they said, oh, I lost my husband just on Monday. I said, what do you mean you lost your husband? No, you had him for so many years. Why do we keep saying that's negative things? You didn't lose him. You were blessed with that man for so many years. Lucky thing. Can you actually see it in a different way? You can't have people forever, but when you have them, you enjoy them, have a wonderful time together, and you value that time. Without, you know, often I say, it's not a cruel thing to say, would you rather have never known that person? Your son, your daughter, your best friend? Would you rather you never knew them? They never came into your life? Of course not. So let's stop saying we lost someone. You gained them. Had them for such a long time. Thank you so much for visiting my life. But then, when they do die, where do they go? Is that it? And of course not. If you just say body stuff, of course, you know, body stuff, it goes back into the ground, mixes up with the dog shit, and just comes up again, I don't know where. But if it's... there's obviously much more. This thing called the mind, that sixth sense. There are people who can remember their past lives. There are people who... And it makes so much sense. This idea of reincarnation, as a scientist, as a trained scientist, you know, from Cambridge University, theoretical physics, I can't just understand people's blockage to feel that, you know, they hadn't existed before, they're not going to exist again. Everything goes round in cycles, even this so-called universe. Even Professor Stephen Hawking, you know, he was theoretical physics at Cambridge. He was a few years earlier than me, senior to me, but one of my best friends, as I've mentioned many times before, was one of his top students, Professor Bernard Kai, Emeritus Professor of Theoretical Physics at Queen Mary College in Cambridge, also a Buddhist, also used to go psychic researching together, hunting ghosts and also other weird stuff. And even someone as bright as Stephen Hawking realized that the Big Bang is not the beginning of the universe. There was something before the Big Bang, has to be. A universe without any boundaries, cyclical. Have you ever seen, universe doesn't go in a straight line. Life doesn't go in a straight line. It goes round and round and round. When you're born, you have no teeth. When you're old, you have no teeth. Force. When you're born, you have no hair. When you're old, you lose your hair. A lot of people do anyway. When you're born, you can't walk. When you're old, it's very difficult to walk. It's one of the things which I've known, like old age. Old age, you can't see, you have to wear glasses. You can't hear sometimes. You know, sometimes, isn't that the case, Peter? Can you hear okay? Yeah, very good today. Okay, we have to get better hearing over there. But, you know, sometimes you can't sort of control your limbs. You've got Parkinson's. Sometimes you're forgetful. And I always mention that, and that's when you start life like that. But there's one thing at the end of life gets stronger and stronger and stronger. You know what that is? The mouth. Old people can really talk. And isn't it interesting? So can kids, babies. They can scream. They can scream so loud. And I know that because when I go on aircraft, oh my goodness. When one starts, if there's three or four, then they all start together. Oh, I'm trying to get some rest. Anyway, so that life goes round in circles. So why not beginnings and ends? This is again just the origin of the universe. Was there really an origin of the universe? This is science. Many years ago, 400, 500 years ago, we all thought the earth was flat. You go far enough in a boat, that's all they could really do, and you fall off the edge. We know how silly that was. These days we can see the blue dot called planet Earth. It's a sphere. You can go round and round and round and round and round and round, and you come back to where you started from. You all know that. But now, the next stage. There is no end to this planet Earth. It's a sphere, limited area, but no edges to it. So space, the final frontier. That was Star Trek? Yeah. To boldly go where no monk has gone before. Not boldly, I like that, boldly go. Anyway, Star Trek. And I always wondered when I used to see Star Trek as a kid, where does this universe end? And if there was an end, what would happen if you go over the end of the universe, the end of space? Would you fall off the edge? Is there a big wall like Mr. Trump built at the edge of the universe to stop extra universals coming into our universe? There can't be a wall. That never made any sense to me. How can there be an end to this universe? And of course, you found out, good old Albert Einstein, that there is no end to this universe. This universe is also curved. Just like planet Earth, the universe has limited volume. It doesn't go on forever. In any direction, you go far enough and you come back to where you started from, the curved universe. To me, that was really cool. There is no end to this universe. So, let's go to the next stage, time. Why should time be straight? I call that flat time. You go far enough into the future and you fall off the edge. Armageddon, the end of time. You go far enough back into the past and you fall off the edge. Creation, the beginning. I'm sure that maybe 100 years, 200 years ago, people will look back as we used to look back on the people who thought the earth was flat. That time was flat? Why should it be? When everything else in this universe, in life, is curved. It goes round. So, creation, what are you talking about? Beginnings and ends goes round and round and round. To me, that makes so much sense in physics and also emotionally. So that's the answer to rebirth, reincarnation, if you like. You don't just stop beginnings. You go far enough back and just you begin this journey and you die and that's some sort of ending to it. No. What about all the ghosts? I like ghosts because most of the ghosts are really kind. They're nice ghosts. So, I remember just in some religions like, I was a really good friend of the Catholic abbot, Abbot Placid at Eunorcia Monastery. And so because there wasn't any monks, you know, other than the monks of Bodhinyana Monastery and the monks in Eunorcia, we used to have like very deep monk conferences, secret monk business. Because, you know, you can understand, even though the Catholics were Buddhists, there was just so much in common. And especially I became really good friends with Abbot Placid. And when we were walking through the old parts of the monastery up in Eunorcia, one of the earliest buildings of Western Australia, and I just asked him, said, this is such an old building. Are there any ghosts in the monastery in Eunorcia? He said, no. So because, you know, in Catholicism we don't believe in ghosts. He should have known better, because he knows how cheeky I am. And I said, well, what about the Holy Ghost? Yeah, that's not good. Caught you out. So we have a lot of fun, and that's actually more important than being right, than going to dogma. This beautiful thing which brings people together. Just, you know, just being able to have some fun and some joy and some lightness and laughter together. That is an important part because that is about the spiritual part of your life. You know, if you're going to, you know, be with someone and love them and care for them, don't you laugh a lot together? And isn't it the case when you stop laughing together, then your relationship is just getting very, 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 what is it, tired. Very dry. Laughter, love, life. I mentioned this when I was in Indonesia once. The only people I've ever seen who never laugh are corpses. It's true. So, if you're not laughing, when you're getting very close to death, be careful, laughing keeps you alive. But anyway, so that part of but then people sort of start to get, they ask these questions and say, well, just how can, where do all the people come from? It's obvious. Because we have this really weird idea, and as a scientist it doesn't make any sense, the evidence is quite compelling. Just human beings aren't the be-all and everything of humanity, of beingness. We have animals as well, and they're not that distant from human beings. So this is one case of when I was in Thailand, there was this poor monkey who had been treated very well. So somebody brought it and they let it stay in the monastery. And in the monastery, it was treated well, really kindly. But because the monks always treated the monkey thought he was like a monk. And so every time we had tea in the afternoon, the monkey insisted on having a cup of tea as well. So the monks and the little monkey had tea time together. Really cute. But because the monkey was associating with the monks, you know, it was because of that that became very protective. And one day there was a noisy car outside the monastery, the monkey chased it and was run over and killed by the car. Very sad. But anyway, the head monk there, you know, he was a really good meditator. You know, and there are such things as psychic powers, you know, weird stuff which people have, and especially if you train the mind in meditation, of course it happens. And so he saw the stream of consciousness of this dead monkey leave the body and go into the village where there was a woman who was pregnant, and saw them enter the woman's body. And he made a mistake. Monks shouldn't really do this. He told the other monks what had happened. And so all the monks, you know, they knew this woman because, you know, there was the local village where they went for alms round and did all the services. They were always waiting to see what would come out when a woman gave birth. And it was true. No. And when it came out of the womb, it was, and I wasn't there then, in the words of the monks, it was exceptionally hairy. That is, this is a monkey, it didn't mess around, and so everyone knew that that baby was a monkey before. So if ever you have a kid, or maybe some of you these days, a grandkid, and it acts like a little monkey, sometimes you don't know how true your words may have been. Because human animals can get reborn as human beings. So, you know, where do all these human beings come from? How many primates, these huge beings, have no habitat anymore and are no longer around? Must be pretty sure that someone like Michael Phelps was probably a porpoise, okay, in his previous life, which is why I shouldn't say that. Mike, that's only a joke, Michael, please don't sue me, or your manager, whatever. But you know, there's a possibility of that. Because sometimes human beings can be so arrogant and proud that we think we're special. That idea of, you know, this religion being special, or this race being special, or this part of the earth being special, or this planet being special. Sometimes I really wonder about that. It just doesn't make any sense to me, even as a scientist. So, we can actually move between species. So that's where people came from. That's where all of the bikies came from. Gorillas in the past life. It's only a joke, bikies. Please don't come beat me up tonight. Oops. But sometimes I say these things, it's not just jokes. There's some truth behind this as well. And of course, there is evidence as well. And this is one of the reasons why that sometimes people just, because they don't want to face up the evidence, I always wondered why on earth. Those questions, don't they make more sense? Sometimes that, you know, can you finish all your business in one life? How many times are people just about to die and they're just young? They just haven't just been and done everything yet, at least what they want to. So obviously they have another chance together. Even the really crazy thing about love at first sight. How many of you experienced love at first sight? Sometimes people did. How come? It's not love at first sight. What was it this? Oh, no, okay. Closer story, closer to home, my auntie. My auntie, my mum, they grew up almost like sisters. Sorry, not, well, actually were cousins, but, you know, we call her an auntie. But because my grandma and her sister only had one kid each, that was my mum and this auntie Opal. And after the Second World War, they were just young women, and they were just, one evening, they just, something to do, they went to see one of these mediums. And this medium, just interest, that's all. This medium took one look at my auntie, Opal, and said, "You are soon going to meet your husband." And said, "His name will be Donald, surname Wolfries." That is not a common name. Donald might be, but not Wolfries. And she thought it was just a load of old bunkum until a week or two later, and I had this confirmed by my mother and my auntie. I asked them so many times, "Is this true?" I said, "Yep." A couple of weeks later, at a dance, didn't have nightclubs in those days, at a dance, this nice young man asked my auntie, "Will you dance?" "Yep." And said, "What's your name?" "My name's Opal." "What's your name?" "Donald." "Uh-oh." Wolfries. They were married for 60 years. He only died a couple of years ago. She's still alive. So it's amazing just how on earth can that happen? There's many cases like that. So it's obvious that people sometimes knew each other before. So why are you coming to this Buddhist center? Is this the first time you've heard me? And sometimes, you know, you don't know, your friends, sometimes, you know, there is some memories there. And to me, that's actually quite beautiful, that, you know, if something happens in your life and it doesn't work out, that something happens and just somebody dies, you can have another go if you want to. Another try, and see if it works next time. Unfinished business. And we keep... It would be wonderful if people actually could accept that. If people could accept, if Donald Trump could accept that in his next life he's going to be a Democrat. Or even better, a Mexican. Whatever. I mean, you know, so it gives us just the... What, most important thing, wouldn't it be wonderful if we all knew that many of us would come back again in another life to a planet which we may have destroyed by then. We have to live by the consequences of what we do. If you think, by the time we get global warming, it's already here, but by the time it really creates damage, we'll be out of here, we'll be dead. But if you realize you'll be back again, you take much better care of this planet. If you realized that that one of these days that you are going to be reborn again. Sometimes when people ask, what's the problem with youth? Why don't they be more respectful or something? You know why? It's because they were the old people of 10, 20 years ago. We put them in old people's homes, we never looked after them, and now it's their revenge time. So be careful to look after the old people. Put more resources into the aged, especially I can say this at my age. Put more resources into the elderly people. Isn't that right, Peter? Yeah, at the back over there. Because you're going to come back again. If you don't treat you nicely now, you're going to come back and cause a lot of trouble. So sometimes we think elderly people are not productive. They're a waste. So we don't really look after our elderly. If we realize they're going to come back again, then of course we look after them. When life goes around like a cycle, not an ending, comes back again, it changes the whole idea of life. It is a spiritual part, not just the material. Material is important, spiritual is equally as important. The nature of the mind is also so, so important. So that way that we can answer a few questions and understand a little bit more. And of course, this is not just theories. That especially, that's why we meditate for. We meditate to make the mind so peaceful, so still. We can get some extra information. So we don't just see what we want to see. Sometimes we see what challenges us. That was always why I became interested in science. You can challenge everything. You can make questions, even until, you know, some of the professors, you know, just they've just got fed up with you. You know, something like, I remember just one tutorial I went to, it was on fundamental particle physics, and there was a lot of quantum theory. I was arguing with my tutor for the whole hour, and I wouldn't give in, because he was wrong. Maybe I was wrong, I don't know, but I had a good time arguing. So you never give in. Always ask the questions until you get a decent answer which satisfies you. Because there, actually, you're digging deeper into the nature of life. And it's not just physical questions. It's the emotional questions. And the only real person you can ask those emotional questions from is yourself. In your deep meditation, that's where you make the biggest inquiry. When you're really listening inside. And of course, when you're talking back at life, you're thinking too much, you can't learn because you're not listening to what life is teaching you. To really ask the question and then listen. Listen to the answer. The life is always teaching that answer. That's one of the reasons why we call ourselves forest monks. You know, we belong in the forest. It's the nearest part we can get to nature. Maybe desert monks, away from the cities, away from the towns, where it's more silent. And little things which you learn, say, in the forest. My favorite simile this last year, every tree belongs. Every tree is part of the forest, even the ones which are twisted and bent. Every one of those is important. What I often noticed, what sometimes people get stigmatized because they don't look the same as other people. They don't sort of have the same resume, they're not successful, or they're not sort of as intelligent as other. Come off it. That's not a stigma. They belong. And the most beautiful trees in the forest are the ones which are the most bent. So that's what you learn when you listen to the forest. That's how you learn, not by talking back. Ask your questions, but then do the listening as well. Okay, so that's a little talk about questions, time, reincarnation, the meaning of the life, the whole work. If you really understood that, you don't need to come back next week. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Okay, any questions from overseas or from outer space? Very good. Okay, the first from Mars. Okay, from USA. What are some ways you suggest to find out our unquestioned assumptions? Okay, be willing to be wrong. That's the first, our unquestioned assumptions. And the best way, though, is be really still. Listen more and be prepared to change. So sometimes, there's our old ways of thinking and just so accustomed. We got used to this, and so we don't really want to change. So unquestioned assumptions, sort of question them and just be willing to change, willing to be challenged, willing to lose. Don't always have to gain. In other words, it's the ego, the sense of self-pride, which stops you admitting you're wrong. What's wrong with being wrong? Yeah, sometimes I make mistakes, I'm wrong. But you don't want to admit it in public. Why? I was trying to find out, where did that come from? And it's because if I got something wrong when I was a kid in class, as a young boy, you know, my teacher said stupid, bad, cross. And you had to go to detention or to sit in the corner or something because, you know, you were wrong. So I haven't been taught that, you know, yeah. So, you know, why do you actually, you know, why should I feel bad about being wrong? It's the teacher's fault for not teaching me. But anyway, so when you learn, it's okay to be wrong. That's where we learn from. So we take being wrong as a personal failure, as some fault in our ego. If we make a choice and it doesn't turn out what we expected, we think that that's something wrong with us. There is nothing wrong with you. You are fine. Mistakes are part of life. Oops. Right, see, I've done something wrong now. Thing has gone black. Help! Tech support. I deleted it. No, you deleted that, see? Started to unlock. Okay, we're back again. I'm hopeless with IT, even though I just gave the keynote address in South Korea at the 2015 World Computer Congress. Check it out, it's online. I was invited all the way to Daejeon in South Korea to give the keynote, not just an ordinary part of the conference, the keynote, just after the president and the dignitaries. I think there was some big politician over from New South Wales was there. And I gave the keynote address at the World Computer Congress. I don't even know how these things work. Anyway, how do I get rid of unnecessary things and become more minimalist? Well, what do you want to keep unnecessary things for? Just, you start with little things. Keep, you know, get rid of some of your possessions in your house. You know, sometimes you go in people's houses and you can't even move in there. There's so much stuff. And on the walls, there's always stuff. See, this is pretty good over here. There's nothing, well, not that wall, back wall, I suppose it is. You know, in Bodhinyana Monastery, we have a shrine. We try and keep things off the shrine, but people keep putting things on there. We have these beautiful natural mountains. When I was young, you put a mountain up there, a beautiful mountain, you put a flag in there. Can't you leave the mountain alone? It's nature. What happens next after a flag? Then they put in a restaurant. Leave the blooming mountain alone. These days, any high area, what do? They put a mobile phone tower. Can't we just have space and nothing and emptiness? Instead of saying, oh, a nice little picture would do over there, a nice little pot plant over there. Can't we have it nice, empty? Empty space gives you a great sense of freedom. So get rid of unnecessary things, become more minimalist. It's not more, don't call it minimalist, call it more free. More space in life when you have less things cluttering up your house. Be more minimalist, have more emptiness in your past. So you're not cluttering up your past with all these usually bad memories, one things which happened. Don't clutter up your wardrobe with so many different shoes and clothes. I don't have a wardrobe. Wear the same fashion every day. Okay. And anyway, that's how to get rid of more things. And the best thing is just notice how free it is to have less. And don't buy into the materialist, either spiritual materialist, see how many great attainments you have in meditation, how many teachers you've been to, how many retreats you've been to, how many medallions you have or stuff you have. You know, just don't be a spiritual materialist. See how much little things you have, how much you can let go of, give up. And other materialists, because things aren't as important. The best things in life aren't things. And lastly, from the UK, could you please share more perspective on how to work with and learn from grief of bereavement? That is when we focus on what you think has been taken away from you. But it's never been taken away from you. My father died when I was 16. How old am I now? That were 67, yeah. That's almost 51 years passed away. But I can still remember him. His memories, the wonderful times we had together, that hasn't been taken away. The terrible, terrible, terrible jokes he used to say. He came out, he just really sort of caught me. He said, oh, just, you know, one of my friends, This is one of the jokes he said. One of my friends, he said, was in an accident on his motorbike, and he rushed to hospital and had to amputate one of his legs. And that wasn't the worst part of it. And it does happen, they amputated the wrong leg. Apparently, I'm not sure if that still happens, but people say they actually put an X on the leg before they actually, you know, just do the amputation even these days. Simply because, you know, people make mistakes, and poor doctors are totally overworked, underappreciated, and so sometimes they get tired. So as soon as they found out their mistake, they had to take him back into surgery and amputate the other leg. He had to do that. So as soon as he was able, he got a lawyer and he sued that hospital. But he lost. He didn't have a leg to stand on.
And I remember my father telling me that bad joke. And you've heard it before, but you still get sucked into it. So that's my dad. It's so wonderful having him as a father for such a, only 16 years, but it was worth it. Of course, you'd love to have him for longer, but 16 years was really good.
So that's how you have these memories. And the memories will never be taken away from you. You never lose those. And they're the beautiful ones which enrich your life. Wonderful times you shared, and also how much you learned from them. He really learns sort of, you know, most important things in life. My father was poor, but he certainly knew how to love and be kind. I always remember just, okay, I'm going to nostalgia. But I remember just when living in a very small place, whenever I had an argument with my mother, and they two of them, they really shouted at each other in front of the kids. No place in the house other than in front of the kids. It was just a small house. And then, but eventually, there's no way they could run. They couldn't escape from one another. So they had to make up. And that was the nicest thing, to see my mum and dad make up in front of me. They just shouted, sometimes they weren't talking to one another. And eventually, oh, come on. And they just said sorry and made up and kissed in front of me. And it wasn't they did it on purpose, because there was no place which wasn't in front of me and my brother. And I was a wonderful experience, that realizing that sometimes people have arguments. Welcome to life. We don't always agree. And so, you're wrong. And then afterwards, oh, come on. There's something more important in life than arguing. So that's what I learned from my father. So what a wonderful thing that was. I never lost him. Wonderful having him for 16 years. So, the grief of bereavement, try and look at it in another way. The wonderful celebration, I just feel so blessed and privileged to have known, because I know this, who this fellow is, to have known Rita, your wife, for such a long time. Wonderful memories. And of course, if you really miss her, come back again. You'll have another go. You meet her, and maybe you might go to a spiritualist and say, he says to you, you are soon going to meet your wife. And that was your wife in the past life. Come back again. Who knows? But I know sometimes people don't want to get married again. Because there was an old custom in Thai Buddhism that if you offer things together, then you get married again. You make the good karma, you have another try at being married again. And when I did this, it was a Thai girl, an Australian husband. And I told the Australian husband, yeah, you know, that there's, if you do things together, or think things together, there's a very good chance in your next life you'll be reborn and meet one another and marry again. And at that, the Thai girl took her hand away straight away. One life together was enough. I should have said that. It was very funny, I laughed. Anyway, any questions from here? Okay, there it is. Okay, that's all tonight, folks. Okay, so now we can pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, and then we can go and do what we need to do.
Arahang Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantam Abhivadeti. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sanghang Namami.
Very good.